Welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 193. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me in the podcast booth today, we are flying with solo accompaniment. My wingman at my side is the newly updated Keith Andrew 6.0.
I can sense the disappointment in your voice.
Not at all, that was thrill. Keith.
Really? Is that how you sell thrills?
Well, you should hear my disappointment voice. I sound like Snoopy in those, as in just silent. Oh, who's the other one? No, Droopy. Droopy, that really nasal kind of everything's depressed. Yeah. So that was my thrilled voice.
Well, yeah. Okay, I'll take your word for it. I'll ask any women you've been with if that's what you were.
That shouldn't take long. How have you been, sir? It's been a slightly busy week, both on the biz and Pocket Gamer front. What with all this, iPhone nonsense?
iPhone. I don't ever want to write those words again.
You were already sick of it last week, like within 24 hours of the release, sort of the announcement. Now you must just want to kill everyone with an iPhone.
Well, we all stopped writing iPhone, and now we're all writing iOS.
Yeah, which we will be coming on to, nice segue, in this week's edition of The News.
News!
As those of you who are listening to last week's cast will already know, there was something of a big deal in the iPhone world. We had the announcement of the iPhone 5 and its subsequent release details, including all manner of specs and numbers and other bits and bobs relating to the iPhone. Now, as you'll be listening to this on the Friday, if you are, the iPhone will have been released this morning.
No.
Yeah, 8 a.m. Queues have already started. Queues started days ago, obviously. The moment it was released, in fact, they were interviewing people out on the streets in the sleeping bags with that slightly glazed look in their eye of, I want an iPhone.
Well, I do have to question the mental stability of anyone who's 4 days ahead is sat in a queue or something.
It's that line between enthusiasm and, you know, mental.
It's just a phone.
Yeah, but they want to get it first. They are there. Those are the people who go onto boards and write first. But yeah, the new iPhone 5, bit longer, bit thinner, bit lighter, bit... Well, that's about it, really. But everyone's been very excited about it in that way that everybody always is. As it will come out this morning, hopefully everyone who's listening to this podcast will already have one. Yeah, you know, gaily flicking through their 176-pixel longer screen. Looking at that extra row of apps, that extra tweet that they can see, that extra email on their email scrolling column, and going, ah, life is so much better now. Think of the days, do you remember when I could only see it? 5 tweets on my screen, and now I can see 6. Ah, oh, those are the days. I was a different man back then. Anyway, what the big news is this week, we've already gotten over the iPhone 5. Pretty quickly.
Is that all right? That's done, is it?
Okay. Yeah, that's done. That's it. iPhone 5 out the way, sorted. What we're on to now, or what we're interested in, is iOS 6. Alongside the new device, we've got the launch of the new operating system, which always comes with its own special fanfare, collections of bells and whistles, and the occasional wet haddock as well. some people have been discovering. We've actually, on both sites, we've been knocking up loads and loads of features on what are all the new things you can expect from iOS, what are the exciting new features, what are the little sneaky hidden ones that you can't see, and we've been talking to various developers and whatnot to get their opinions. So, to give a quick rundown before we get into the actual dissection of it all, in terms of improvements, you've got, Siri's been tweaked, so it should be able to now pull up sports scores. Hey, it'll also be able to list movies, it'll find businesses within the UK, and works with the new iPad. So iPad users now get it as well, so that's grand. Facebook integration, which you'll be able to do Facebook posts directly from Safari rather than having to use the individual Facebook app, so that's kind of neat. The all-new map system, yes, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, speaking of paddocks. Photos, you can upload your photos via the photo stream folder, that's what it's called, So you can upload all your photos rather than having to use you know, third-party apps and whatnot, so that's grand. You can also do it in Safari itself, which is useful. You've got an iCloud tab built into Safari now, so that you can sync your web pages between your iPad and your other devices if you're using iPhone, so that's kind of neat. There's FaceTime over 3G. There's an offline reading list, so you can save articles and then read them later if you want to. All manner of bits and bobs, new things. And there's also a few hidden features that we'll go through a little bit later. Now, I've been reading a lot about it. I've seen a bunch of videos on it, but my iPad, my lowly iPad 1, which is made for history books, doesn't run iOS 6, so no. I'm kind of watching the whole thing through a little window.
I have the best of both worlds, because I too have my iPad 1, which obviously didn't get the update last night, but then I updated my iPod Touch last night too.
Hey, so you have you have seen the future.
I have seen the future. It's weird when iOS, the new iOS comes out, the major ones, because Twitter literally becomes a stream of people going, either complaining or celebrating, oh, have you discovered this, or have you discovered this, oh, that's a bit rubbish, oh, that's a bit rubbish. And they don't even clarify what they're talking about anymore. It's just a series of tweets that could be, if you didn't, you weren't in on the news, as it were, you wouldn't have a clue what the hell people were talking about. But it literally is just like hours of people, well, me included, actually, just kind of going through. My mainly complainy ones, to be honest. But.
Yeah, I made the mistake of putting a hashtag iOS6 into Twitter and just witnessed the reactions. It was that kind of like foot in the water, let's see what everybody thinks. And yeah, much like you described. Thing is, though, it's like day one stuff, isn't it? I mean, none of these launches ever come off without a hitch. To actually turn it on and expect everything to work out of the box, as it were, is unrealistic. It's like with whenever they do the new games and the MMORPGs, Diablo 3, everyone tries to log onto the server at the same time, like 6 million people try and get on, and then everyone acts all surprised when it crashes.
That was what's surprising. Mine, I mean, it probably took about an hour and 20 minutes to both download and install, but it actually did it first time, which in the past it hasn't.
That's pretty good.
And it was literally bang on 6 p.m. I'd been checking from about 5 o'clock to see over the air to see if it was there, and it wasn't. And literally, it was just after it turned 6, it was there. So I did it, and it was about an hour and 20 minutes or so. I don't know where everyone is. I suppose it's like opening the Christmas present up that you've asked your parents to get you so you know what it is. kind of excited to get it, and then you take the wrapping paper off and you realise, oh, well, you know, I kind of knew what it was. Mm-hmm. There aren't any, you know, I mean, I'm looking at this hidden features thing right now, but there aren't really any massive surprises. It looks, you know... If to the naked eye, it's no different. There were basically two things which kind of, well, no, three things actually, which I was left with after a few hours of using it, mm-hmm. which were that the App Store is much better.
Oh, yeah.
Just is much better. Apart, people are making a point, actually, it's a bit squashed on because they've changed the way when you search for apps now, you get this screenshot, which again, we knew was coming, and you kind of have to scroll to the right rather than it just putting apps in like, you know, rows or whatever, so you know you search for a particular word, it just brings up one and you keep scrolling to the right to see more. Because the screenshot kind of takes up the whole, which that's a little bit awkward. I imagine that works better on iPad than it does on iPod Touch, but the actual just general look of it is a lot sharper.
You say about the App Store, sorry, that's the bit that I was sort of interested in. Like little touches, like the fact that when you purchase an app, it doesn't punt you out of the App Store again. Yeah. So you have to log in. That sounds like a good idea.
It is much better, yes. That's constantly. You wonder why it's taken them so long to do that.
I know.
It's always annoyed everyone.
That's such a strange feature to have there. It's like you've bought it now, get out!
It's weird. It's like Apple only wants you to buy things one at a time.
And they're doing it so that when you have install updates, which is the other thing, like there's still that lack of automatic updates, but now when you do updates, you don't have to enter your password every single time.
Yeah, people had said that it does that for free apps, or that I downloaded a free app last night and it still updated asked for my password.
Really?
Yeah, because the big thing was, oh, if you've got a freemium, then you know that's a big hurdle to overcome, the fact that someone doesn't have to enter the password, which I don't quite understand, but it's not like everything, well, I'm not buying this because I'll have to put in my password because you'd never buy anything. But I it still did that for me, so I don't know whether that's, I don't know, something I've done wrong, but the App Store, it looks notably different, just in the way that it fits on the screen better. All the text and the boxes and stuff look better orientated than the rest of iOS in a way now, because the rest of iOS still looks like how it did look, whereas this looks slightly sharper.
Well, that's always been kind of a bugbear of yours, isn't it? The fact that throughout all of the changes and everything, it still pretty much looks as it did, 3 years ago.
I get what people have. I mean, it doesn't look exactly the same. Remember when everyone got your first iPhone, you couldn't have a wallpaper. I mean, it really, if you got an original iPhone or iPod Touch out now and looked at it, it would look different, and you'd be doing things now without thinking, and it wouldn't work. But it is a bit of a bugbear of mine that I do find it a bit boring, but it works. But the other two things were that it's weird. So like as you say, they've integrated Facebook and Twitter into your notifications at the top, so you can post a status update. Which I might be able to say you've been able to do for Windows Phone for 2 years now, but you can post it without going. You can post post it without going into the app, but you can only post them separately. So, like as I say, I'm used to Windows Phone. When you go to post a status update from within the OS itself, you can tick you want it Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or.
You could do that on Android as well.
You can't do that on this. You just have to do it one at a time, which is like weird. It's like how much effort would that have taken just to. So that's a bit strange. That was constantly annoying me because you kind of think, I don't want to have to copy and paste and then drop it in the next one. People generally, not all the time, I don't do everything, but a lot of people do now update. I mean, a lot of people have it fixed so that when they update Twitter, it comes up on Facebook anyway. So this seems a bit of a weird oversight. And the other thing is it's hammering my battery.
You said it's been caning your battery quite badly, hasn't it?
It really has. I charged it, obviously, I had it charging while it was installing. So by the time... it finished, it was obviously set on 100%, and within less than 4 hours it was down to 10%. And I hadn't been doing that much. I'd been doing the odd tweet and Facebook whatever, but checking stuff out, but I hadn't actually played any games. I hadn't used it. Doesn't have Siri on the iPod Touch, which is another annoying thing. I don't see why that's not there, but that's a bit of a worry, because that's what happened with iOS 5. Although this seems 10 times worse now, that my iPod Touch used to run for days and days and days on iOS 4. You just didn't. You could use it or not use it. It would just run. You'd go 3 days without charging it, and then suddenly iOS 5 came along, and something about the 4th gen iPod Touch did not like iOS 5. It would just hammer it the whole time, and this appears to be the same. You could just see the bar in the top right just edging down.
Well, often that happens again within the first week or so of launch, and then they try and work out there are perhaps some things running in the background that are munching batteries, and often they work out little fixes, don't they?
I'm hoping.
To extend it slightly.
I'm hoping. I mean, it's not that big a deal, but it is just one of them things you think, oh, for God's sake.
Well, the really exciting thing, obviously, are the new emojis, which I hadn't heard about this, but they're little special pictorial emoticons, they're called, that are big in Japan. That they've thrown into iOS 6, and I thought, oh yeah, fine, whatever. And when I hashtagged iOS 6, loads of tweets about these emojis. People are going, oh, I could do emojis, and it gives you special icons for Facebook and different animals, and for gay marriage. There's a special gay marriage emoji.
Where are these?
well,
the keyboards.
I guess so. I mean, I couldn't tell you. I don't have the thing. But when I did the Twitter search, everyone was harping on about their emojis and how cool they were, and how they could do different animals. So
I want to have a look at these. Now, I don't know where
that's clearly a major draw. There were some complaints about the upload time when it was originally launched, but you say it wasn't too bad, an hour or so.
Far worse than that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was all pretty good. The thing that has been occupying most of us on Twitter today has been the maps, though.
Yeah.
This new map system, what they have introduced. Now, when you introduce a new system like this, things tend to go awry. You get like teething issues and all that sort of thing. Now, obviously, from the previous versions of iOS have just used Google Maps, just like Android does. And I assume Windows Phone uses Google Maps as well.
No, it doesn't. No. There's no Google Maps on Windows Phone. You can either use you got Bing Maps when it launched, but then when Nokia comes on board, it now has Nokia Maps, which is obviously Navtech.
So. How does it compare? Just out of curiosity.
Well, actually, iOS 6 people can compare them, because very cleverly today, Nokia are on the ball, and obviously watching all the tweets flood in and about, without wanting to ruin it, Apple's own maps, not necessarily particularly flattering.
No.
They kind of put up a web version for iOS of Nokia maps. So if you go to maps.nokia.com, you can install it to that. It has its own little nice icons.
That's a nice way of capitalizing on the
Yeah, it's a good little smart bit of PR. I would say, I mean, I don't know. I don't use maps that often, perhaps because I've got an iPod Touch rather than an iPhone. I obviously use maps on my phone. So.
Or you have a pigeon-like sense of direction.
Well, I mean, I don't drive, so I kind of, and I know where to, you know, where to walk outside. I live here and stuff, so.
I know where Starbucks is. Or
I mean, I always used to use Google Maps just as a kind of, you know, street view, or like if you're going somewhere new, just have a quick look. It's never been a huge bugbear. People, it obviously is for a lot of people, because the literally the reaction of it has been.
Oh, yes. So the iOS 6 Maps, which has been touted by Apple as, you know, the brand new thing. It's got, you can zoom in, and some of the cities are fully, like, 3D modeled. So it's like, you know, zooming around the actual city with it all laid up. And all the previews looked fab. And people have booted it up today and discovered that their house doesn't exist.
Some of the maps are very old.
Yeah, old roads just aren't there anymore, or they're trying to pull up pages and half the pages are kind of in focus and the rest of it's just a pixelated blur. Or more worryingly still, entire roads and bridges appear to have collapsed and just weird visual ticks, like it suddenly turns into kind of a Hieronymus Bosch painting where everything's just warped and bizarre and looks like something.
And there's just places that are coming up that are actually 100 miles away and stuff. That's the interesting comparison, really, because Nokia bought Navteq for this exact reason, because they realized that even with Symbian phones, for this kind of thing, people want maps, and so they very cleverly went and bought one of the leading people. The weird thing about this is that when you look at the Apple Maps, it says that it uses TomTom. So, you know, anyone who's got a TomTom is pretty much the best sat-nav out there. So you would imagine that all the data would be spot on. And, you know, even if it wasn't loading properly or something, you'd imagine that, like, literal places where things were, it wouldn't have any trouble with that, because TomTom seems to know where roads are and stuff. So it's a bit... I mean, it says TomTom and other sources, I think, is the exact wording. So I don't know. They seem to be taking different data from... I mean, I'm sure I read somewhere in the press this week before it even launched that they'd already signed a deal with another map company as well to add some data. So I don't know. It's a very convoluted thing, and I think it only goes to show how much money, obviously, and time that Google put in all over there. I mean, Google Maps for a long time.
Exactly,
now,
so. It's been out for ages. I mean, they've had a long time to sort of, you know, fine tune it and
yeah. The 3D view I saw on a beta device last week is nice.
Mm.
As you say, it's not everywhere. I mean, it seems to be, from what I can see at the moment, London's got it, Manchester's got it. Yeah. I'm not sure where else has got it. It's not preferable to Street View in any way, because you kind of, it's like this isometric view that you can turn around.
Mm.
So it's got all angles, so that's quite impressive. And apparently they had to sweep round with planes over several days. And so everything looks like it's in 28 days later, because there's no cars on the road. And it's like an artist's impression. When you zoom in, it's like things have been painted. So it looks a bit like a SimCity running on a computer without a very good GPU, really. It's kind of like you zoom in and it's still kind of blurred and weird and stuff.
Yeah, I think it more has the novelty value if you kind of use it for the first time and go, oh, that looks cool, and zoom around a little bit. Yeah, wow, 3D. But then in actual practical terms, it's almost more confusing than anything else. If you're just looking, you're using it functionally as a map and you just want to see where do I go.
Yeah.
You want roads and you want the lines, and that's it. We've talked about this before. You just want an arrow and a straight line to point you where you're going. Otherwise, it's just a kind of, like, you know, showing it to your friends one time to go, ooh, and then that's it.
It can't compare to Street View. I mean, I don't know how other people use Street View, but if I'm going somewhere I don't know, I've got to go to set building, as well as looking up literally for where the postcode is or whatever. I will often launch Street View to see what the actual thing looks like.
Me too. It's the same thing. I lived in London for like a year and a half, and within the first 2 days of me being there, it's like, I need to get a smartphone with these capabilities, because otherwise I'm just going to get lost in an alley and never emerge, going to wind up in Narnia or something. But if you are listening to this and have an interest and maybe haven't seen what the kind of issues iOS 6 Maps has been giving people, go to the amazing iOS 6, the figure 6 maps, all one word, .tumblr.com, which is the thing that's been passed around on Twitter today. And some of the images that have been posted are quite good. They just show various, basically, they show the world in various states of disrepair and non-existence, and it looks all like half of it's fallen into another dimension or something. It's,
I'm scrolling through it now as you're talking.
Some of it's quite good. But obviously everyone's enjoyed making lots of fun of it and everything, as Keith is enjoying right now. It's kind of to be expected. A lot of people jumping on it, ha ha ha, Apple's rubbish, yeah, Steve Jobs would have never allowed this, and you know they've released it too early and all this kind of stuff. It's in fairness to Apple and to iOS, it's teething issues. It's quite an ambitious thing, the whole maps mapping everything in the world, especially with the 3D mapping and everything. And I'm not that surprised bits are wrong, and I'm sure they'll polish it up over time.
But the interesting thing, like from a business point of view, is why they've done it, because I don't really understand how anyone monetizes from this kind of thing anyway. So if to have spent all this money, and they've clearly signed a lot of deals with people like TomTom, which you know won't come cheap, and so it's going to be an expensive adventure that they've done to replace the system that their rivals seem to be happy serving up to them, just for the sake of it being their own. I mean, it's not like it has adverts on it; it's free. So,
well, Apple do like people using their own branded products.
But that's the weird thing. I think if they were going to do that, they would be doing it secretly now for like 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years to like. They've obviously spent time on it, you know, it's not happened overnight. So, but to make the conscious decision and to launch it, when you've had what was such a good product on there, to remove it for what seems to be simply because it's made by your rival, and you don't particularly want that, I think that's what got people's backs up more, that there was it's quite un-Apple for there to be something that people were generally rather happy with to be removed for the sake of something that just happens to have Apple's name on it. This website reminds me of the shit that Siri says website. It's the same kind of. All these things never seem to impact on Apple, though. It's not like with another company. If people see all these things, you know, like the stuff that was going wrong with Siri, and all, you would think, what an awful company! All their products don't work. But it doesn't seem to affect Apple at all. Everyone just kind of.
Kind of bulletproof in that regard, though, aren't they?
It's weird.
At this point, I mean, and that leads us onto something else, which is the attack ads that we've been seeing around, which tends to happen now, is no one just markets their own product anymore. They market to deride and shoot down the opposition's product, which is obviously inferred in advertising, but it used to be inferred, and now it's just full on in your face. So all through the week, we've been seeing comparisons, side-by-side spec lists, either comparing it, the iPhone 5, to the new Nokia phones, or to the new Galaxy S3, even. Or the GS3, apparently, as people are now calling it. Everyone online's calling it, and they've never seen an actual human call it that, obviously.
No.
The new HTCs as well. Those brand
new... They started doing those as well already, I think.
Yeah, the brand new Windows Phone 8X and 8S, I think they're calling them. They've all been drawing up spec lists saying, ours is bigger than yours, the sort of standard thing. That you see now, which always it makes, if you launch those kind of ads, it only really serves to make you look insecure, I think, desperate, or
it does. Like, you know, I can talk. I did an advertising degree at uni, and it's just a don't do situation. It's something they literally teach you: do not put out an ad where you even mention your competition, let alone...
You just pretend they don't exist, full stop.
Supermarkets get away with it, stuff like, you know, all price comparison, stuff like that. But things like this, like, it's like you don't get a BMW ad that compares the new car to a Mercedes, because they know that by doing that, they're suggesting, as you say, that actually maybe Mercedes is a bit better, and we're a bit worried about that, so we better draw up this advert which compares them. I mean, it's just... The Samsung one is like a five-minute job anyway. It's literally just a kind of... a heavily marketed spec list with things that are Samsung only because they are Samsung only. It's like saying, has an Apple logo on the back if you're doing it the other way around, and you'd have a tick by the iPhone and a cross by the Samsung. Okay, is that a good thing? It's just and that literally is actually, that's actually run in the press, isn't it, in the US? It's just this list of what's better.
Well, we put up something where obviously we responded to the ad itself. Our deputy editor Mark wrote up a little piece which just said, you know, put the image that Samsung had put up, or whoever had put it up there, the spec list comparison between the iPhone 5 and the S3, and then like broke down all of those extra features that Samsung were listing below. some of which were useful, some of which weren't, some of which were, you know, barely features at all. But it was interesting not just to see the article and then, you know, sort of see what those features do, but the reaction, it really generated quite a lot of ire online. You got a lot of, you know, Samsung Android lovers popping up and being, oh, no, no, it's fantastic, and how dare you, and, you know, you're being snarky and all this kind of stuff. And obviously iPhone fans stepping in and defending it. But the point that has to be made with these, I think it's kind of fair game to turn around and throw a little bit of ire in Samsung's direction, because not to be too schoolyard about it, but they started it. Yeah. These adverts are aggressive. They are saying, your product's rubbish. And so, you know, you have to expect people to turn around and go, well, no, actually, your list is rubbish. So, you know.
I think with this kind of thing, I can't remember what the exact stat is, but there was always a stat touted as, like I say, when I was at uni, where they would talk about the kind of percentage companies would spend on advertising, not to attract new customers, but to make... There's a word for it, there's a theory about reassuring people that have just bought something that they've bought the right thing, and there's a certain percentage of all, like...
Denial?
Advertising budget. Well, yeah, effectively, some products. But, I mean, cars, again, spend a lot of money on this. A lot of the car ads you'll see aren't to make you buy the car. They're aimed at people who already have it, trying to convince them that they made the right purchase.
A positive reinforcement, sort of.
Yeah, it is, yeah, exactly that. And I think with this kind of thing, actually, I think it's more at stopping people who have a Galaxy S3 thinking, oh, look at that, that looks quite good. Maybe I should go and get one of those. Or...
But if you have a Samsung S3, you can take a screenshot by smearing your palm against the screen. Beat that, Apple.
Yeah, sure they want to. Yeah.
Well, one of the things we spoke about last week was that the iPhone 5 has this new elongated screen. It's 176 pixels longer, which obviously means that the entire games library for the App Store is now out of sync with the display. So you've got the games in their original aspect ratio no longer fill up the screen. So you wind up with black bars at the side, like if you're watching a, you know, anamorphic widescreen movie on a 16:9 TV. So obviously people are like, what are they going to do? Obviously they just put black bars at the side, because that's the only thing you can do. But over the past pretty much like 24 hours, developers have been stepping up and updating their games to fit the new screen, which is grand. So you've got big games like Minecraft, Tiny Tower, Temple Run, Sky Gamblers, the new Spider-Man game, Asphalt 7. They've got, you know, a whole range of apps have all been gradually updating, you know, releasing updates, and it's pretty much going up like by the minute. So it looks like before long, you know, most of the major apps will have been updated.
Right, yeah, I mean, I think there are two key days. Well, probably a bit more, but the two that spring to mind are when Apple launches a new iPhone, that day will be full of people, and the day after going on the App Store for the first time, maybe, and downloading scores of apps, or after Christmas as well. So the big ones will want to be there from the word go with apps that look the best on this new bit of tech. So
yeah, and a lot of the new games that were released this week were already compatible with it, so clearly they had foreknowledge of this, and
then
they put in some very last minute changes, but I imagine most of them were aware of what was going to happen. So new games, things like Lily that we'll talk about a bit later, that is already iPhone 5 compatible, so expect anything newly released to obviously work with the old phones, but if you've got a new iPhone 5, I expect that most of the new things you download will fit.
I think kind of we were talking about it with when John was disagreeing with me last week. I think the going widescreen for all of their devices is inevitable, because it's just, you know, life is in widescreen now. So it's
my life's in 4:3, Keith. That's why I get so scared when I come around corners. I can't see what's out of my periphery. So people keep, you know, looming into view. I always start.
Well, you've got to change, you know.
I have. I've got to widen my horizons. There's a couple of things I want to touch on quite quickly while we're here. Both of them being new games. One of them we'll do first. Angry Piggies. Not Angry Piggies. Bad Piggies. God. It's been a long...
That's going to be the clone. That's what the clone will be.
It will. It'll be, yeah. Narky... swine or whatever. It'll be on the App Store for like 24 hours
or something. I'd buy that, Narky Swine.
Yeah, well, no, sorry, Bad Piggies. We talked about it before. It's finally got a name. It finally got announced. We got a tiny little synopsis of what it would involve, written by some dude who appeared to have played it for 5 minutes and had never played any other game in his life. Now, Rovio has put up an actual gameplay trailer, So we were able to see what it is that this game involves. What you have is the piggies themselves are sort of placed on the screen, and then you have empty blocks below them, like a grid, that you then fill with components, like wooden blocks and squares and triangles, not entirely unlike the fortresses, the components of the fortresses that are in Angry Birds. But the idea here is you're building a craft. You're like building a little car or a little plane or something like that. So you have to put wheels on, and depending on how long you make it and what bits you put where will depend on how the vehicle handles. Then, once you've built your thing, you send it off, and it has to zoom across the level and go up and down loops and whatever. And the idea is it's supposed to get to the end of the level and eventually get the eggs that these piggies are so fascinated with.
Looks better than I expected, actually. I hadn't watched this until you started talking, and now I'm laughing at the pigs' faces.
Oh, you and your pig fetish, man. He was like, oh, look at him, he's so cheeky. He's a pig. Yes.
Pigs are amazing. It's not pick up and play, is it?
Well, I mean, it's not anywhere near as pick up and play as Angry Birds itself. You are going to have to sit here and build stuff, and I think that's one of the major problems with Amazing Alex, and by turn Casey's Contraptions. It's not that it was a bad game or anything. It's just that it lacked a certain amount of kinetic sort of excitement and stuff.
For that audience, yeah, I think they will find that both of those games, essentially that model is a little bit more convoluted than Angry Birds, which is literally just pull back
and release, and that makes you a global phenomenon. Whereas this, again, this looks more complicated. You're going to have to build a thing, and then you're going to have to set it off. Once it's rolling, it does look like you can have some fun, as in it, flips around and smashes stuff up, and you can attach, propeller blades so that it works like a helicopter. And when everything's crashing into everything else, it looks quite goofy, and I imagine it can be fun. But again, there's still a good deal more initial investment when, I have to actually sit down and build a thing and stuff like that. And I can't help but feel that a huge, huge chunk of the Angry Birds audience is going to not be turned on by this.
But the clever thing is, by splitting the brand in that way, it won't harm Angry Birds, even if people do find... If it was called Angry Birds Bad Piggies or something like that, people would be, I think, disappointed. But they've kind of made the slight distinction, so it could grow its own audience that may be a bit more used to games like this than those who literally had never played a game before and just got into Angry Birds. So.
Well, the other game that I wanted to talk about briefly is a game from our friends, our very, very rich, very demanding friends at Square Enix. It is a rhythm action game called Demon's Score, and it is out on iPhone and iPad at the moment. What it is it's kind of a rhythm action mashup. So, what you have is a lady with a talking bear, obviously, screaming down a corridor, slashing up enemies as she goes. However, the whole thing is done to a musical soundtrack. So, what you're doing is, in the style of these rhythm games, there's a kind of dot at the center of the screen, a reticle, and you have to either tap or slash sideways or slash up or whatever in time with the music. And if you're successful, then you'll swipe out and kill an enemy or shoot someone in the head or something like that. And each kind of level or each section of it involves rocketing down a corridor, slashing up everybody, and then at the end of it, there's a great big boss that you then proceed to fight. People are saying the game itself is actually quite good fun. It is similar to it's Elite Beat Agents, is it? It was on the DS. It's the same kind of idea. It's like tapping on the screen time, and people really engaged with it. And everyone who started playing it's been like, hey, this is really cool, and the fighting's really fun. So you get to your first boss and hack him up, and a little notification appears saying, do you want to buy whatever the name of the boss is, or a burial in this instance, for like $2.99. And everyone's kind of going, oh, okay, well, no, maybe I won't, maybe I will. They move on to the next level, and the same music is playing from the first level. I mean, nothing's changed. As it turns out, the music that's played in the game is dependent on your outfit. And in order to get new outfits, you have to purchase them once you've defeated the bosses. Each outfit costs about $3 or whatever that will be equivalent to, $1.99 English pounds. And I think there are 8 or 10 bosses, roughly. And there's more in-app purchases that are voluntary, which they're all voluntary, but which involve like a temporary power-up. So 69p you can splash for, I don't know, energy potions, that sort of stuff, consumables. What this all basically means is the app itself will cost you $4.99 or £2.99. And if you actually want to unlock the entire game, as in, you know, get every boss, get every outfit, you're going to wind up coughing up around about £30 or $50 for the privilege. Which is, I mean, we've talked about Square Enix games in the past and how they're doing everything episodically and it winds up costing a fortune. That's a lot.
It is a lot of money. And it's a lot of money in a weird way to do it as well.
Well, I only know it because our American correspondent, Matthew Denier, I think it's pronounced Denier, he can correct me later. Dina? I don't know. He chimed in because he's doing the review at the moment and said, guys, have you seen this? And I've seen it start to pop up online because, you know, obviously people have opened it up and they're going through the beginning, and it's only once you get a certain way through that you sort of realise what this is. And it's not flagged up at the beginning of the game. You don't know it. And the game itself costs you to get in. So the people who start complaining obviously feel justifiably maybe a little bit ripped off. I mean, you can not buy these outfits. But what will happen is then every level you play through, you'll be playing the same song in the background, which is obviously rubbish and not the reason you buy a music rhythm game. You expect to hear lots of different pieces of music. So it's an interesting take on that freemium model that you know has been developing recently.
Well, it's sly, isn't it? What it should just say is, do you want to play the next level? Which is the old-fashioned way of doing it.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of freemium games started out, when they didn't really know how to use the model. It was literally just, you give someone the first level free, and then you start charging if they want to unlock the next ones. Whereas this is like doing that, but covering it in a cloak and saying, you know, you're doing it to buy the outfits, which essentially unlocks the next model. It's just a bit sly.
And very sly. And at the very end of the thing, you can pay even more. So you pay around a fiver to unlock a new difficulty level called Satan's difficulty level.
That's where the money goes, obviously.
Clearly. I have always felt a little bit iffy about freemium. I mean, there's been a huge kickback against it anyway. I'm not one of these people who's like, the whole thing is evil. It can be done right. It can be done sensibly. Unfortunately, so often I find that it isn't, or it's done in a slightly offensive way. This is just a particularly, I don't know, insidious, I suppose. It's like you say, it's a bit sly.
I mean, if they were that confident in it, they should just charge $30 for it from the start to try and eke it out of someone in that way.
Well, yeah. I guess they're doing it. I mean, we always come back to this topic, on various discussions that we have here, because obviously it's the way that the industry is now going. There's no kind of getting away from it. Everything is going towards this free-to-play freemium model, because that's what seems to be making the money. On the other hand, in Square Enix's favour, they've gone and released a game called Guardian Cross that I'll talk about a little bit later, which is free to play, which is actually not too bad. So not all their games are like this, just a lot of them do seem to have this kind of huge price point. So if you do venture into Square's Demon's Score, be aware of what you're getting yourself into. But Demon's Score is not the only new game we've had out this week, of course. So we're going to smooch on over to...
Smooch.
I don't know why I said smooch. Like I said scooch last week for some reason. And I don't know why. Smooch, I'm just going to work my way through.
I mean dinner first, then we'll see.
Yeah, the consonants, yes. We're going to mosey on down to the new releases roundabout. Here we are, the new releases roundabout. It's not as busy as last week, but the cars that are making the journey are that much nicer, which is a slightly weird analogy-like way of saying we've got not so many games, but they're quite good. So, first thing on the list, we have Earn to Die by a company called Not Doppler, which is a translation of a Flash game, which has apparently got 150 million plays, which, you know, it's not bad. It's all right. I assume by more people, unless it's just 10 very, very keen people. What you do is you drive a vehicle through large hordes of, wait for it, you'll never guess, because there's never a game made about these things, zombies! Hey. So you jump in a vehicle and you plow through zombies to try and get... Sorry,
they run after you. I'm watching the video. It's quite amusing.
Yeah, So jump in a car, trundle along, smash out as many zombies as you can, earn a bunch of cash for it, which you can then use to, you know, buy upgrades and kit out your vehicle and whatnot. It's obviously done incredibly well in Flash game terms because people like smashing through things, people like zombies. And yeah, to be fair, like when you see the thing in motion, it's quite good. It looks like quite good larks, to be honest. Lots of boxy constructions. It's just a 2D thing. You're climbing along a plane like you would be in Motor Heroes or Trials or any of those types of games. But yeah, when you smash into zombies, they do their best to like hang onto the car, and there's quite a lot of good ragdoll physics throwing them about and stuff. And I suppose if it's been very popular in Flash, it could translate well here. I mean, it suits the iPhone. It suits the screen.
It does.
And
got a good name.
It's got a good name, and it's got zombies in it, and these things are a winning formula.
Fast-moving zombies as well.
And they've priced it nice and low. It's 69p 99 cents, so that would be enough to justify it.
But if you want to buy outfits for the zombies to wear, they're £7 each.
£7. Yes, they're £7. Your firstborn child and a contract signing away your soul.
No, you've already done that with Apple. So.
Oh, it's in the terms and conditions, isn't it? That no one ever reads. Yeah, that's what happens when they turn up on the door and say, "Can we have your firstborn and your PlayStation and your sofa?" You're like, get out of my house. And no. And they show you the contract. Like, page 156.
They
like,
want your PlayStation.
I don't know if they might do. But you don't know. You don't know, Keith. I could have signed it away already. They could come around for my left foot with a garden shears and cut my foot.
Is that the PlayStation 1 as well? Because you could probably get one on eBay for that.
Well, if you want to have a crack at Earn to Die, 69p 99 cents for that Flash game zombie thrashing fun.
Do not try that at home though.
No, unless you're doing it on an iPad.
You'll get in trouble if you.
In which case, definitely try it at home.
You might need it actually if there is a zombie apocalypse. That kind of.
That's all the way I justify all the zombie games. We're just preparing. This is all, you know, foreshadowing what's to come. We're just getting ourselves ready for the inevitable. Anyway, The Room, which is a new game by Fireproof Games, which is an offshoot of Fireproof Studios, which, if I remember correctly, has been set up by ex-members of Criterion, the chappies who used to do Burnout. They have gone and formed their own studio, and one of the first things they're putting out is this peculiar touchscreen point-and-click adventure horror puzzler thing. It's a bit of a, you know, mashup, as you can tell, called The Room. It's only available for iPads, and it's only available for high-end iPads, so iPad 2 and 3, which irritates me profoundly because I really want to play it because it looks kind of awesome. If you're into atmospheric puzzlers and things with a, you know, a touch of horror and whatnot, like I am, this is the kind of stuff that really floats your boat, and we've got a review up on the site. I do suggest you go and look at it because the production values on this thing are incredible. The entire thing is, as you'd gather, set in a room, and you seem to be, you're unlocking puzzle boxes, and you have to unlock them by solving little riddles, turning keys, discovering other objects and using them with other ones, which all sounds, you know, that's a standard puzzle game, but the way it's presented, the way it looks, and the music, the atmosphere it's creating are all like top notch, and it has a really kind of slightly creepy vibe about it that appeals to masochists like myself, but also anyone who likes kind of high quality games. Everyone who's seen the trailer has just gone wow, and our review, I think we gave it a 9 and just said it's absolutely the nuts, so to speak. So if you have an iPad, I mean, I don't suppose you've seen this, have you, Keith?
I haven't played this, no. I have heard some buzz around it.
Have you? Yeah, well, I've been cursing the fact that I can't play it, but I have looked at everything I possibly can about it and sat there at the screens and just wept, because it looks brilliant and, from all reports, is absolutely awesome. So if you happen to have a high-end iPad and fancy puzzling creepiness, The Room is £2.99, $4.99 on the App Store at the moment. Definitely worth checking that one out. Keeping with the high-quality, high-production values theme, we have Lily, L-I-L-I, by Bitmonster, which is, again, a company set up by ex-members of a very popular studio. These guys were the dudes who worked on Gears of War.
Mm. Yeah, so, we watched this in the news many, many podcasts ago, didn't we?
That's right. And if you haven't heard about it, it is a sort of adventure RPG combination, which is set on an island, which is, and the island is presented in an extremely kind of good-looking, almost Pixar-like way. The graphics are, once again, really sublime. They're properly good-looking. It's a kind of youngish-looking girl with glasses on, and from what we've seen from, again, the reviews that we've had up, she's, you know, rocking a kind of itty-bitty Lara Croft vibe, where she's, you know, mooching about on this island called Geos, discovering things and speaking to the locals and engaging in combat in a non-combat sort of way, which I'm not quite sure what that means, but that's what it says. It looks amazing. Again, it really does look lovely. It's one of these very, very, very big, colourful, very cartoony, but well animated, beautifully presented world. Mark has reviewed it, Deputy Editor Mark, and he said it's very pretty and it's kind of enchanting in the way that the trailers would suggest it is. Apparently, it's a little bit maybe light in the gameplay aspect, but I haven't played it, so I don't know. And it certainly looks the part. If you fancy a look at that one, then that's going to set you back £2.99, $4.99. It's available on iPhone and iPad, but only the high-end ones, so 4, 4S, iPad 2 and 3. So go and have a little look at that one if you found something pretty. Going back in time, is Luna Silver Star Story Touch. Now, again, I'm talking to the wrong person about this, knowing your love of JRPGs, Keith.
I know what you mean.
Did you encounter Lunar back in the day? Back in your you know, the halcyon days of...
It's too busy watching Home and Away. I wasn't... Yeah.
Well, for those of us who like games, Lunar...
Yeah, not me.
Was a game way back then. It's one of the earlier JRPGs, which some people credit as coming up with some of the mechanics for JRPGs.
This is what I should be blaming for...
one of them. It's not like the original or anything, but some of the mechanics people have said, like, people held this up as an example of one of the early, the good ones that they used to do. It's the standard fantastical story you would expect: young boy striking out on a quest to go and, you know, find monsters and kill dragons. And, well, in this case, he wants to be a dragon master. He's got this hero dude who he worships, who is himself a dragon master, and he wants to do that. So he sets off with his half-sister, Luna, and a little cat-like thing, whose name I can't remember, called Gnarl or Carl or something like that. Schnarf, I don't know, one of those. And he's got to go and do quests and do turn-based combat and all that stuff that you do in a JRPG. What held it up as extremely noteworthy at the time, we're talking back in the days of the Mega CD and the Sega, they remade it for the Sega Saturn. I think it was originally on the Mega CD, I might be wrong, were the cutscenes. They had these beautifully animated anime cutscenes, of which there are about an hour in the game, you know, broken up. And these were really, really striking. And the script was really quite strong. It was written by an actual novelist. And the translation, when they translated it to English, was also quite good. Usually these things get somewhat lost in translation. But this one was actually really strong for a JRPG. So it's remembered very, very fondly, and there have been several updates over time. It was revamped in 1999 for the PS1. And I believe it's that version that has been ported over now to the iPhone and the iPad. So, Lunar Silver Star Story, if you were either a fan of the old one and you fancy a bit of nostalgia, you can grab it. Or if you're new to it and you do like JRPGs, this is a kind of page from history that's really worth checking out. It's a little bit pricey. It's going to be £4.99, so that's $6.99. But it's a great big thing. It's not going to be over in 15 minutes.
These days, you see, the kids don't grow up wanting to be Dragon Masters. You'd want to be on X Factor or something. So.
That's what it should be.
You should reset it in the air. Yeah,
your quest to be Simon Cowell or Gaston's daughter or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, in addition to the article that we've got up on new releases, there have been two big releases this week. One of which is Rayman Jungle Run, which I talked about in fairly exhaustive detail the past two podcasts, which basically is just awesome and you should get.
I've been playing that today, in fact.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. I'm just on the first section of, is it jumping?
Yeah,
it's good. It's like, presentation wise, very good. Mm. It reminds me a lot of platformers of old, but kind of with the throttle stick push forward. It's Yeah.
And just jump, yeah. Well, they've done a really neat trick of being able to lay the UBR engine over top of the their engines, past the games that did the version, the iOS version. And important to say, it's not a version of Rayman Origins. It's a totally different game, which works like a continuous runner where you have to tap the screen to jump. It's been designed from the ground up for the touchscreen, and it really shows. So go and grab that immediately. Is it $1 or $2.99? You bought it, Keith. You tell me.
I think it must be one. Otherwise, I might have looked at it a bit further before buying it.
I think it's $1.99, $2.99.
Levels. I mean, the levels are gorgeous, and it's kind of constantly changing environments. So it's kind of
It's honestly a phenomenal looking thing, and the gameplay does it stacks up. So go and get it. The other one is Street Fighter X Tekken. Well, I mean, I'd love to sort of counter it, but I'm to be honest, I'm not a massive 2D fighter fan.
You're a lover, not a fighter, aren't you?
No, I'm not exactly. No, I'm just not. The game that I really enjoyed back in the day was on the original PlayStation. I had Soul Blade. Before it was Soul Calibur, I had Soul Blade, and that for some reason I really got into, really enjoyed it, and actually got good at it while everyone else was playing Tekken 3. I properly loved it. Beyond that, like I've never just the love didn't stay with me to the other games. But obviously, this is hugely two massively popular franchises which have paired up. I don't think it sold as well when it was released on the Vita, because it came out on the Vita, didn't it?
I do not know.
I'm pretty sure it did. I'll edit it out if it didn't. it turned up on the Vita. And I think Namco released a press release saying a kind of an apologetic explaining why perhaps it hadn't sold as well as they'd thought. They said that there was maybe too many fighters out at the moment. There was kind of a glut of brawlers that were released at the same time. And people were worried that kind of the shine's worn off the genre. But if you haven't played, it's a 3D fighting game. You can do 2-on-2 tag team battles. You got a huge roster of characters from both Street Fighter and Tekken. There you go. It's based on the console and Vita game of the same name, but it has got some extra features that are just for iOS. So when you smash your opponent with a launcher attack, you spin a little gem roulette, and then you might get a power up at the end of it. So there's kind of little mini games that pop up that are exclusive to iOS. It's a universal app. If you get it now, provided it's still up at this price when the podcast goes live, it will cost you $1.99. $2.99, which is dead cheap. So it'll then, after that, it'll go up to $2.99 or $4.99. So have any interest in either of those, grab it while it's hot and cheap. Well, we've touched on Square Enix once or twice today, and it's actually a Square Enix game that I have been playing.
No.
This week. Yeah, oh yes. Because, you know, I won the pools. I won the lottery and I could afford a Square Enix game. No, actually, this one has been legitimately free. So we should take a trip to the What We've Been Playing fields.
What We've Been Playing!
It's a lonely, desolate afternoon on the What We've Been Playing fields. It seems that everyone stopped playing games because they're all on their iPhones laughing at maps which don't look like the world.
I can see Pete sat over there, but he's got a migraine.
We have to apologise for the fact that we're a two-man team today. Peter's not feeling his best, so we've told him to put his feet up and close his eyes and lay back and think of England. Yeah, one of those things. He's there. He's on his side. He's looking a little bit sore, and everybody else is has got their head buried. Shut it. There. Their head buried in their iPhones, making fun of the fact that their house is now a kind of blurry smudge, or doesn't exist anymore on iOS maps.
Or they live in Woolworths.
Yeah, suddenly in the middle of Woolworths in the sweeties department. But we have been playing actual games. So, Mr. Keith, you should probably go first. What have you been playing this week?
I have been playing... Which was on our new releases, was it last week? The awkwardly named Twang the Fox.
Ah, Twang that Fox. Yeah, you were fond of that name, weren't you? Because Twang and the Fox. Is that literally why you downloaded it? You're just like, I've got to Twang. I must twang.
I saw it been getting good response actually from the street. You know, I had my ear to the ground. You know.
From the block, you've been getting feedback from the block, have you?
I just ask random people when I'm out about in town. Okay.
Have you
twanged a
fox?
I'd say it's a grower. I started off and I was thinking, what's the fuss about? Essentially, all you do is draw a line on the screen that acts as like a rubber band, essentially, that when Mr. Twang and his various friends later on...
Is he called Twang?
I think the first one is, but you play as... I think it's with all these things... No, the first one's called Fonzie, that's it, and the second one's called Farrah.
There are different foxes.
That's a girl. There are different foxes, yeah, as you go through. So maybe Twang's the last one, I don't know.
Okay.
Or maybe it's literal description.
I thought it was an instruction rather than a name.
Yeah, I think it might be.
But we'll call him Mr. Twang, anyway.
No, I don't know what Twang is. How do you twang?
You know what twang is. It's on a rubber band. When you pull it back and go, and you go twang, that's a twang.
Though, isn't it? It's not like an action. It's never mind. Anyway, yes. So that's essentially what you do. It's like a 2D game where you're trying to get higher up the screen. And to do so, you just draw a little line that turns into a rubber band when you've let go. And then Mr. Fox lands on it and bounces up. And it all depends on the angle that you draw it and the length you draw it. If you draw a little short one, then he will go much higher. If you draw a long one, it doesn't give you as much of a bounce. So it's all about, initially, it's all about just basically learning angles to bounce him off walls, to pick up little bits of food that have been left. I think the story is that all the foxy friends have been stolen by someone and they've left the trail of food as clues to where they are.
So he's like a bouncy fairy Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, well, he's just a ball with a tail, essentially, but, you know, it works. So initially I was kind of thinking, well, because the actual mechanic of it is quite boring, just literally drawing a line. And once you've understood angles, which aren't that hard to you think, well, what's all the fuss about? Gradually it then starts layering in, and the challenge actually becomes the design of the levels themselves. So there's added elements, just like cannons you fire out of, this kind of other things that you shoot into. And then there start being kind of baddies you have to avoid hitting. So it becomes a case of really navigating your way through finite little areas. And then water starts rising from the bottom with every move you make. So, I mean, there isn't any... You don't get awarded any points for using less elastic bands, say, but later on there becomes this element of speed because there's rising water tide. And it really does remind me... I can't remember if people ever played Sonic 3. There was a bonus stage where you were springing up to try and pick up these kind of balls that are falling down. And... you kind of had to keep on moving up as quickly as you could. Mm. Essentially, it reminds me of that. You start to get a bit panicky, and obviously then the lines you draw are less accurate and you end up bouncing yourself into all kinds of trouble. So it's a case of keeping calm and making your way through it. And it's quite, like I say, it's the level. I mean, I'm literally only on the second batch of levels, so I'm assuming it gets even more convoluted. But it's the levels themselves that start to draw you in rather than the actual just drawing of the elastic band. So it's a grower. Yeah, I can imagine that if I keep playing it, that based on what's happened so far, I will start to enjoy it more and more. I would say at the moment it's probably an 8 at the moment.
Okay.
But maybe I think people have given it higher than that, haven't they? So I might end up...
Those people probably understood the meaning of the word twang.
The weird thing is I'm playing it on iPad, and the textures for like... the level itself are all high res, but then Mr. Fox and the food and the baddies and stuff are all a bit blurred, so it looks a bit weird on that. But other than that, the actual presentation of it's very nice, and it has a look to it.
Yeah, it kind of fun in motion when we saw it last week.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm impressed with that so far. Like I say, I have also been playing Rayman, so I've been splitting my time between the two of them today.
No, that's not too bad. Good stuff. Well, I've been doing a bit of Square Enix research, really, I suppose. Two games, which I'll talk about very briefly. One is I'll start with Guardian Cross, which is a card battler, which I'm not really that familiar with. It's not a genre I've ever been particularly into. I know that Magic 2013 is supposed to be extremely good, and I think I'm going to try that next. I've played the game a long time ago, the actual card game itself. And I don't know, I've never necessarily taken to them. I played Top Trumps as a kid, but didn't advance much beyond that in terms of strategy card games. But I thought I'd have a bash at this one because it's gotten quite a lot of attention on the site. People keep posting comments on it and also sending out their little promotional codes where you can, you know, send out a code to a friend and you get extra stuff and whatnot. But basically, it's a card battling game that's kind of framed within a narrative. So rather than just playing through a series of progressively more difficult levels or, you know, battling more harder and harder bosses, it's actually framed like a story, almost in a Final Fantasy sort of way. And it is based on the universe. It's apparently, we said last week, apparently drawing on Final Fantasy 11 and 14, which is a weird choice. But, if you know, that universe is what it is, and there are a lot of similarities through. So, the first card I caught when I was out hunting was a Caed Sith, and it's like, oh, I remember all this stuff. I can hear your eyes glazing over. That's how obvious your decision is. But yeah, so if you're familiar with the Final Fantasy universe, you'll recognise a lot of the card designs and things. The difference here is that you collect cards not by just buying them, but you actually go hunting for them. And there is a mini game in which you get presented with a targeting reticle, which you move around a map, and they actually have little shadows of your creatures kind of moving around on the map, and you have to zoom your reticle over the top of them, tap the screen to fire at them, and once you reduce their energy bar, that creature is now yours and their card becomes yours. What you then do is you can start using some of the less powerful cards to combine them with other cards, make your cards more powerful, give them, you know, stronger stats. And then when you go into battle with other people, other creatures, obviously you'll stand a better chance of making it out alive. The battles themselves play out over a bunch of different environments. So you'll go back to like a home base and they'll send you out on a quest. And you say, go to this area and explore this. And you go, all right. And go there and there's presented with a map with kind of three or four places you have to go to, four locations. And you tap the location and then the fight begins. And if you win, you can move on to the next one. The impression I've got was not the one I was expecting. It's presented pretty well. It's a bit weirdly translated, but that's to be expected. The art's very nice, and if you have any nostalgia for Final Fantasy whatsoever, obviously you're kind of like, oh, I recognize that. And it's obviously an interesting departure because it's quite different from your average Final Fantasy game. The thing is, and I don't know, because I've only been playing through, I maybe played through about an hour, hour and a half, the battles just sort of play themselves, as in you collect the cards and you power up the cards, and then when it comes to the actual battle, you just sit back and the battle plays out in front of you, and it lists out everything, that's all the attacks that are going on, and then you either win or you lose. Which wasn't what I was expecting. I was expecting to have to choose which cards I was going to use first and, you know, arrange them in some way. And I expected it to be more in depth than it was. Now, when you get to the Colosseums, which is PvP stuff, which I haven't done yet, things might get different. So, you know, I could be just at an early stage here, but I was expecting to do more. I was expecting to have more strategy involved. And the only thing to really seem to do is to shoot the creatures, collect the cards, power them up, and then just watch yourself win or lose, which I feel a little bit disengaged from. I was surprised that I wasn't laying cards down at a particular time or doing something like that. Maybe it does open up like that later. However, it seems to have done great guns in the community, and lots of people have downloaded it. It's free to download. As I say, you can buy energy, which will allow you to go hunting more often. You can get, and obviously you'll be able to buy creatures and packs and everything as well. So there is money to be spent if you want to, but you certainly can go through and play it, you know, free of charge if you want to. So it's an interesting experiment. I'm going to continue playing it to see if it gets any harder or to see if more strategy appears as the game goes on. And mostly just because I want to get my head around these types of games and then move on to something else so I have a basis for comparison. But it's interesting. I guess it's interesting. I've not seen Square Enix do this with the franchise before. What I have seen them do, however, is the other game I've been playing, which is Final Fantasy Dimensions, which we did talk about. This is the one that's being released in 5 episodes. The first episode is free. The following episodes are going to cost you around about $2.99, $3.99 each, and it's going to wind up costing you around 20 quid to get the whole package, basically, which is obviously a lot. Now, I've played through, I think, almost all of the first chapter, and it's exactly what you would expect, in stark contrast to Guardian Cross. If you have ever played a Final Fantasy game from the 16-bit era, you have played this game. Whether that's a good thing or not depends on your feelings towards them. Your eyes are now so glazed that they are reflecting mirror-like.
Just smiling wryly, that's all.
Well, I've never been like a huge Final Fantasy cheerleader, but I was introduced, I mean, I was younger at the time, but I played Final Fantasy VII and was kind of taken into that particular universe. The steampunk thing that they had going on there, I liked and I engaged with and I thought was very interesting. And I've backtracked since then, and I've been playing Final Fantasy III/6, depending on which side of the Atlantic you're on. And I've been actually enjoying it quite a lot. I've been playing it on my S2, of all things. And it's been kind of good fun. This plays pretty much exactly like that. They've prettied up the graphics a little bit. I mean, it's a conversion of a game that was, I think it was released on high-end Java devices, and has then been ported over to iOS, and they've prettied the graphics up in as much as it's kind of high resolution, but the art itself is still very lo-fi. And so, looks like the older games. Battles play out in that very same turn-based way that you're utterly familiar with. They even have, has the same kind of the music's there. It's Final Fantasy through and through. I am not 100% on it, I suppose. It was pegged as a kind of a tribute or a fond look back, and in many ways it is. And if you like, and it sounds such a cop out, saying if you like all that stuff, you like this. But it's true, and that's the market I suppose they're going for. They're cashing in on nostalgia with this one. And my feeling is that perhaps you should just play the old games. Unless you've played all of the old ones, like all of the old Final Fantasy games, and this is, you've been waiting for the new episode, then fantastic. Then you can probably crack on with this one. And maybe it's an easier gateway in, because the old games, Final Fantasy III and that, are very expensive. That you have to buy them £10 outright. If you want to see, I suppose it's a good introduction to the Final Fantasy universe if you've never played one before. Because it's pretty much a template of all the old games, and you can just dive in, play the first chapter for free, and see what you think. And it's as good or bad as you feel those old games were, really. So I think they're quite good, and you'd think they're quite bad. But I think something is slightly lost when you... It's kind of halfway in between, graphically speaking, for example. It's obviously trying to look a bit old school and lo-fi, but it's still got that high, modern day high resolution to it. And somehow that doesn't seem to sit quite right. I always think it should either just be high res or it should be blocky pixels. And this is somewhere in between. It's like, new tech posing as old, which jars slightly with me. I don't know. It's just a personal preference, I guess. But I don't know whether I would follow it through... purchasing all the individual episodes, because it's going to wind up being very, very pricey, and I think I might just want to go and just carry on playing Final Fantasy III in the end, because it's kind of the thing upon which all of this is based. So, yeah, two different Square Enix games, one free, one ultimately most definitely not. Both will appeal to Final Fantasy fans in one way or another. I'm not sure how far I'll be going with either of them, but... I think you should play them, Keith. I think you should play them both at the same time.
Really?
on two different devices, with a giddy look of glee on your face.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, not likely. I can do, but if you want me to come on here and moan even more about
it. No, go and look at iOS 6 maps and chuckle. That'll cheer you up.
I am, as you're talking. I've had it open the whole time.
Well, that, I think, brings this special two-man edition of the podcast to a close. Thanks very much for joining us. We should be back with possibly more people next week.
No.
Now we're going to keep it. No, actually, yes, we've ostracized the rest of the group. It's going to be the James and Keith show.
We don't need them. Yeah. We got rid of Will. We're getting rid of the others now. Just one by one.
You're next, Keith. We will catch up with you guys next time. Enjoy your iPhone, iPad, gaming.
Bye-bye.